Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money Members Club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
So Money Episode 66, Gretchen Rubin.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Hey everyone, welcome back to So Money. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Whether you're on your morning jog, your morning commute, afternoon commute, lunchtime, gym time, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me. If you're someone who is interested in the psychology of money and learning more about yourself and why you do what you do when it comes to money and spending and saving, you're going to enjoy today's episode and today's guest. Today's guest is author Gretchen Rubin. She is the writer of the brand new book, Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives. Now, Gretchen began her career in law, and she actually clerked at the Supreme Court when she realized that she really wanted to be a writer. Since then, she's become one of the most influential, thought-provoking writers on habits and happiness of our time. She's the author of several books in addition to her latest, including the blockbuster number one New York Times bestseller, The Happiness Project, which is one of my favorite books. It is based on the year in Gretchen's life, which she spent experimenting about how to be happier. Three takeaways from our interview with Gretchen. One, the four human tendencies we all should be aware of, and the tendency quiz you can take on Gretchen's website that will help you learn about yourself I actually took this quiz and learned a good bit about my own tendencies and why I might be good or bad at keeping habits. Why degree of temptation and your personality matter when establishing new habits, and how to know whether you're a classic underbuyer or overbuyer and what you can do about it. Here is the lovely Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen Rubin, welcome to So Money. Wonderful to have you on the show.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
Your new book is called Better Than Before, and you've identified 21 strategies that's allowing readers to essentially learn how to make or break habits effectively once and for all. I guess the fact that you found 21 strategies is a good thing.
Yeah, it can sound a little overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, how do I deal with that? But I think you're right. It's actually good, because what it means is that in different situations, with different habits at different times, we have a lot of things to choose from. You can pick and choose whatever appeals to you, because there's such a range of strategies that might work.
I took your four tendencies quiz on your website, GretchenRubin.com, and you suggest that readers do this in order to sort of do the self-reflection to then figure out how to best strategize, right, to achieve habits. And there are four tendencies that you have narrowed down. One is an upholder. The other is questioner, obliger, and rebel. And I actually, it turns out, am a questioner. I probably wasn't too surprised to hear this, because this is kind of what I do as a profession. Am I in a good place, a bad place with this? What are the pros and cons?
Well, right. The four tendencies have to do with how we meet an expectation, an outer expectation like a work deadline or a request from a spouse, and then inner expectations like our own desire to play guitar, our own desire to get start a blog in our free time. And so, as you say, there's the four tendencies, and they describe how people respond differently to outer expectations and inner expectations. Now, questioner is one of the largest categories, it turns out. Most people are either questioners or obligers. And questioners, that's a great tendency, because they are very focused on what makes sense. They hate anything arbitrary or irrational. They want to be convinced. They want to believe before they're going to accept an expectation that's being asked of them. But sometimes that has a negative, like they have analysis paralysis, where they want too much information. They want perfect information, which they can't always get. Sometimes other people get exhausted by their constant questioning and their kind of refusal to just say, like, okay, well, we're making a decision for better or for worse, we're moving forward. And sometimes they can almost seem like crackpots, because they will arrive at their own conclusions. That's what they want to do. They want to do research and arrive at their own conclusion. And they might arrive at a conclusion that is very different from what the people around them think makes sense. You know, like my friend whose husband with cancer disagreed with their cancer doctor about what his treatment should be, and so kind of went off in his own direction. So all of these have good and bad sides to them.
And you're an upholder, I understand.
Yes.
And you're actually good at keeping habits, which is what led you to want to write this book, is that you are, what you say, kind of part of a very small percentage of the population that's actually really, really good at habit keeping. Is this in your DNA, you think?
I do. I think with age and wisdom, we can learn to counterbalance the negatives of our tendencies. But I do think that we come into the world hardwired with a certain perspective.
Why is it important to take this quiz about tendencies before beginning your journey towards developing good habits?
Well, really what I found in my quest to understand habits is that, you know, there's this really strong impulse among experts to come up with a one-size-fits-all solution, like do it first thing in the morning, or use cash, or have a cheat day, or do it for 30 days, or, that there's one-size-fits-all, and that if we could only find that magic solution, that it would work for everybody. And that just seemed to me to be obviously not true. I mean, just looking around the world, I was like, sometimes the same things don't work for people. There needs to be an acknowledgement of the range, that sometimes, getting up in the morning and doing something sounds like a great idea on paper. But if you're a night person who can barely drag yourself out of bed until 10 o'clock to get to work, then going for a run at 8 a.m. is not a solution that's going to work for you. So you're just setting yourself up for failure if you decide that's the habit that you're going to try to form. And so the really important thing to do as you're reading through the 21 strategies is really to look very hard at yourself and to say, what's true for me? When do I succeed? When in the past have I succeeded? What were the circumstances at a certain time that allowed me to do this? For instance, a friend of mine said, when I was in high school, I was on the track team and I never missed track practice, but I can't go running now. And that fascinated me because it was the same person and the same habit, but at one time she could do it effortlessly, and at another time it was very difficult for her. So what was the difference? And so the four tendencies is just one of many ways that I try to help each person understand how they're different from other people and how they're alike from other people. You know, like for me, if I'm facing a strong temptation, it's much easier to give something up altogether. And for some people, it helps them to indulge in moderation. And this is just one thing that's true for you. When it comes to money, some people do better when they use cash. Some people do better when they use credit cards. And some people do better when they use online shopping when they're trying to control their spending. There's a good case to be made for all those strategies, but they're not universal strategies because different ones work for different people. So the four tendencies is one way to understand aspects of yourself that then can influence what might work for you. And in particular, like the big takeaway, I think, of the four tendencies is that for people who are obligers, and that is people who easily meet external expectations of them, but they might have a lot of trouble meeting expectations for themselves. The key thing is external accountability. That is what works for them. And so that just put in some kind of form of external accountability and you're going to do much better. Like a friend of mine who was an obliger and wanted to get her finances in order. She said, well, I kept saying that I was going to do it. And then I made an appointment with my really expensive accountant. Right. And then I knew I had to get ready because I didn't want to waste a minute of that guy's time. And so by building in that external accountability, she was able to get herself to do something that had been frustrating her.
Well, it's like my gym. If I don't show up for my session, then they automatically charge my account on top of like the fee that I've already paid to buy my package. So that keeps me accountable for sure.
But that's interesting too, because for you that helps. But for some people, as weird
a
as
rebel?
Sounds, but for some people, paying almost makes them feel like they've done their job. They're like, well, I've paid for it. It's almost the same thing as if I actually worked out. And so for them, they might need to have the feeling of that trainer is disappointed if they don't show up. So it's also like the psychology of like what works for you. For some people, the idea of losing money is incredibly persuasive. They're like, I am not going to waste that money. And it drives them nuts. And then other people, they're like, I paid for it. It's like, I practically want it myself. And so that's another thing is be very aware of, like, if you're trying to build an accountability, what kind of thing matters to you? Because people are very different on like what gets them going.
Yes. And actually on your blog, I noticed at one point you asked your readers what were some of their financial habits. And I read the comments and they were all over the place. What do you think were some of the best practices? Understanding that for everyone, it's probably a different strategy. But, you know, just generally speaking, for our audience who's listening in, wanting to know how to maybe install some good financial habits, what are the most common ones that are effective?
Well, one thing that it turns out is that when it comes to following a habit, how easy or difficult it is to follow that habit matters tremendously. This is what I call the strategy of convenience and inconvenience. So you want to make it super convenient to do the things you want yourself to do and very inconvenient to do anything you want to avoid. And moderators, by contrast, they kind of get panicky if they're told they can never have something. And they do it better when they can have it sometimes a little bit. So a lot of moderators, I don't know why this is like the thing that about moderators is they keep like a bar of fine chocolate in their desk. And once a day they eat a square of fine chocolate. I mean, I would eat that candy bar. It would just be haunting me until I ate the entire candy bar. I could never do that, but that's a moderator. And so this comes up a lot with food, but it also comes a lot with shopping and technology. These are places where many people find it easier to abstain. So if you have trouble managing online shopping, just say to yourself, I'm only going to shop in real life. Or if you have trouble, like you get carried away when you're actually in a store, but you find it a lot less enticing to impulse shop online, say, I'm going to really buy everything online that I possibly can as a way to just get something out of my life. Or maybe there's a whole category of things that you're like, you know what? I'm just going to stop. I have so many clothes. A lot of them still have the tags on them. I'm just not going to buy any more clothes until I absolutely positively cannot live without a new hat or whatever, you know, new mittens because I'm freezing, or I'm going to the beach and I don't have a bathing suit that fits. you know, really say, I'm not going to do any of it. Because for a lot of people, it's just easier. And people often say like, oh, well, you're so self-disciplined. That's why abstaining is easy for you. I'm like, no, it doesn't have to do with discipline. Because if you're this kind of personality, abstaining is easier. Mm-hmm. It's the lazy way. You give it up altogether. You know, like I'm not going to buy lunch at work. I'm only going to bring my lunch every single day. I'm never going to eat out because I just spend way too much money buying lunch at work. And then just say like, that is it. I'm just done making that decision. I've made my decision and I'm just going to go all the way into it. And for a lot of people, that's easier. It sounds so demanding, but it's actually easier.
Yeah. So this particularly works best for things that are your real weak spots, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because if it's something you're kind of lukewarm about, it's easy to be moderate. Like, I don't really like potato chips, so I'm like, meh, I'll have a few.
Yeah.
But, you know, you put a Girl Scout cookie in front of me, man. And
Thin Mints,
like,
man.
Yeah, that's gonna go ugly real fast.
You've talked on your blog also about, can you tell I've stalked your blog?
That's excellent.
I searched the word money, and I just see whatever Gretchen has talked about money. What you talk a little bit about this, you know, Paul Sullivan, he's a fantastic writer for the New York Times. He actually has a new book out about wealth. And he wrote an article citing Brad Klotz, actually, who I've worked with in the past on studies about our various stories that we tell ourselves about money and kind of the four money scripts that we all kind of inherit and take on with our lives. And kind of it becomes the story and the script that we tell ourselves when we are unable to, say, commit to good habits or whatever. And I'm curious now to kind of shift the conversation to more about Gretchen's mindset when it comes to money. And you said that what best defines you is money vigilance. Mm-hmm. People who are cautious about spending, they pay debt promptly. They're the ones who may refuse to spend for no rational reason. But so being money vigilant, and then you also say you're an underbuyer.
Yes.
Is this something that you learned in your environment growing up? I know that a lot of being a good habit keeper is part of your DNA, but what about when it comes to money things? Did you have good role models growing up?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, my family never talked about it, like, but there was just a lot of consciousness of like value and being responsible. But like, I certainly never knew how much money we had as a family. I got my allowance very sporadically because I would forget to ask for it. My father would forget to give it to me. I certainly earned a lot. I was very conscious of wanting to earn as much money as I could. So I mowed lawns and had summer jobs. But I think something like being an underbuyer is for people who really hate to shop and really hate to spend. And a lot of times they'll end up in situations where, you know, I won't have gloves in time because I'll put it off as long as I can, or my kids won't have something because I'm like, maybe we don't need it just yet. Or I'll buy like one tube of toothpaste. It's like, why not buy three tubes of toothpaste? Cause you know, you're going to need more. Like underbuyers are always looking not to buy. And overbuyers are kind of like, this could come in handy, or this will be a good gift for somebody, or I'll get it in three different colors, or I'm going on a trip, so I need like 10 different things. I'm starting running, so I need like a reflector thing and an extra shoes and a book about running. And, you know, and so that I think I was just born with, just this kind of dislike of the whole process. And yeah, but I mean, so I think if anything, I just sort of unconsciously absorbed my family's values and attitudes about it, not through kind of explicit conversation.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a financial philosophy or a money mantra? And in terms of mantras, do you think those are helpful when we're trying to establish habits, good habits?
Absolutely. I think the more, like, if you can have some succinct phrase that just rattles around in your head all the time, I think that's really useful. And one of the things I often do if I'm studying a subject is I try to do like a manifesto where I try to distill my top beliefs or my top conclusions into like 10 short phrases. Because I think the more that you do that, the more, like, if it's very easy to have a thought, it just runs through your head. So like for me, my biggest mantra is to be Gretchen. And I'm constantly thinking, well, be Gretchen is that, you know, when I'm trying to decide to do something, be Gretchen is this Gretchen. And with money, you know, as an underbuyer, I really have to encourage myself to buy because I don't like to. And that's very inconvenient because a lot of times I don't have the things that I need. So I have to really, like, you know, I remind myself, if you know you need it, buy it now. Because my instinct is often like, well, I'm right here in front of a drugstore with 10 minutes to spare, but maybe I'll buy it tomorrow. It's like, no, buy it now. Like, get it, cross it off the list. And like clothes shopping, I used to feel like, well, I should only buy a few things at a time because I don't want to like go overboard. And now I realize I really don't like clothes shopping. So if I'm actually in a store, I should buy every single thing that I think I can possibly use, because that way I won't have to come back, you know, for longer time. One of the things that I tried to do for Better Than Before, one of the habits I tried to acquire was the habit of throwing away any garment that had a hole in it. And I could not do that. I'm like, oh, there's one more good wear in this sock. Or, oh, if I wear this t-shirt with a sweater, nobody will see that hole. You know what I mean? That's the underbuyer. Like, they hate to shop. And so then a lot of times they kind of get surrounded with things that don't really work or aren't really suitable, because they're like, oh, you know, like I told somebody I was opposed to Kleenex for a long time because I'm like, well, I have a dedicated product. Like, you could just blow your nose with toilet paper. People were like, that is really insane. And then I was talking to another underbar. It's like, oh, of course, I hate conditioner, hair conditioner. Like, who needs that? You know, I'm like,
oh, but apparently it's all you need. I was talking to a hairstylist and he's like, okay, he's like,
don't shampoo.
Don't buy shampoo, just buy conditioner and condition like 2 or 3 times a week. And that's it. He's like, we're in an environment where we are cleaning our bodies way too much.
Interesting.
And oh yeah, he's like, you're going to hate it at first because you're going to feel like, you know, you're going to feel like something's missing, but your hair is going to love it and you'll save a ton of money and it's actually better for your hair.
Isn't that hilarious?
That's my so money tip of the day.
Okay, there you go. See, as an underbuyer, I'm like, see, one less product buy.
Right. He's like, just invest in really good conditioner.
There you go.
There you go. So we're almost wrapped here, Gretchen. And I want to ask you a few rapid fire questions that I ask of all my guests. First thing that comes to your mind. Okay. So if you won the lottery tomorrow, what's the first thing you would do?
I would get a 2-hour massage.
I love massages. What is one thing that you spend your money on? I know you're an underbuyer, but if there is one thing that you spend your money on that makes your life easier or better, what would it be?
Office supplies. I love office supplies. My younger daughter is exactly the same way. So yes, like excellent pens, mm-hmm. cool post-it notes, clips, you know.
That container kind of store.
Right. I love that stuff.
Is there a splurge that you cherish, that, I mean, you love, maybe you're a big fan of massages, but is there a splurge that is something that is in your life, something that you covet?
Well, perfume. I love perfume. And it's funny because it's a good thing to have as a splurge item, because if you really love perfume, you really want perfume that you really, really love. And there's a lot of perfume that's just kind of mediocre. So it's hard to find a perfume where you smell it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing perfume. And so it's sort of self-limiting because there's just not that many perfumes that I love so much that I really want to wear it over and over mm-hmm. and over again and then want to buy it. But then when I do buy it, it's just pleasure, you know, for months and months and years to come. So it's a wonderful, I work by myself, so I don't have to worry about like disturbing people in the elevator or something like that. So I'll put on perfume sometimes 2-3 times a day.
And it's the scent, right? The scents are so visceral. It can take you back. Yes. I mean, I remember like 100%. The perfume I wore in high school, and then suddenly I'm remembering like all these moments. Yes. I love that.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes, I love that.
One thing I wish I had known about money growing up as an adult now is?
I wish I'd known more about compound interest. Mm-hmm. Compound interest is very powerful. Like, and the younger you are, the more important it is. So I wish I had really, it took me a while to be like, wow, that is really, that's a really big deal.
Exactly. It's something I try to encourage all millennials to start doing. Yeah. It's just, even if it's just $20 a week, like just do it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's amazing.
I know. When I donate money, I like to give to blank because.
I like to give to organizations that either I feel like are going to make a big impact or that are important to people whose values and judgment I trust. So a lot of times I'll give to an organization because a friend is involved in it. And I'm like, well, if they care enough about it to be volunteering their time and to be raising money for it, then I know that it's probably going to be something that's valuable.
I like that. And then finally, the show is called So Money, which is really an attitude, right? That you have it together financially. I'm So Money. I'm Gretchen Rubin, and I'm So Money because, I'll give you a chance to brag here.
Because I've finally figured out the secret about how to have better habits.
Yes, 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 yes. And soon we all will too. If we pick up this book, the book is called Better Than Before. I'm predicting a number one New York Times bestseller here.
Oh, are you nice? Oh, I hope you're right.
I have a good feeling about that. And
that would
so
money.
Yeah, everybody go to GretchenRubin.com and fill out that tendencies quiz. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. Thank you so much, Gretchen, for the work that you do. Best of luck and wishing you continued success.
Oh, thank you. I so enjoyed talking to you today.
That's a wrap, folks. If you'd like to learn more about Gretchen Rubin, please visit her website, GretchenRubin.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin. Also, check out Gretchen's weekly podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. We've got all this information as to where you can find Gretchen at SoMoneyPodcast.com. There also is the transcript from this interview, comments as well from this interview and all previous episodes. And as always, I want to hear from you. Please submit your question about money or work, life. Go to SoMoneyPodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh, and there's a really good chance that I'll answer it this weekend or next weekend on So Money, on the Ask Farnoosh edition, which is our weekend edition when I get to connect with you. Now, if you love what you're hearing and you want the podcast to continue thriving, please spend a minute or two and leave a review on iTunes. It's the single most impactful way to support the show at this point. Good reviews get you good placement and more organic growth in the iTunes store. It's as simple as that. And please let me know when you do leave a review, because I'd like to personally thank you and also submit you in my weekly drawing. I choose one new reviewer every week to receive a free 15-minute money blitz with me. So do that, and I would be most appreciative. Thanks so much for tuning in again. I hope your day is so money.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.